So this is number 22 of the AXY versus the Home Department, and this is 220, 230, 240, 240, 240. So we're keeping the speed up. Ready. Nobody who has read in any depth the history of miscarriages of justice in this country over the last 50 years, or who knows anything about the difficult problems that confront the intelligence community when they try to assess the quality and reliability of the information they receive, could approach the issues in this case with anything other than great anxiety. The difficulties which face the intelligence community and those who have to decide how much reliance they can place on their advice are compounded in a case like the present. Differences in language, differences in culture, and often very subtle differences in political or religious ideology abound. All these differences present formidable problems for the dispassionate assessor. Mistakes may well be made. The anxiety is heightened when one reads and rereads the evidence of a solicitor who has great experience in these matters and of the solicitors for the two other respondents. But unless one is willing to adopt a purist approach, saying that it is better that this country should be destroyed together with the ideals it stands for than that a single suspected terrorist should be detained without due process, it seems to me inevitable that the judiciary must be willing, as SIAC was, to put an appropriate degree of trust in the willingness and capacity of ministers and parliament, who are publicly accountable for their decisions, to satisfy themselves about the integrity and professionalism of the security service. If the security of the nation may be at risk from terrorist violence, and if the lives of informers may be at risk, or the flow of valuable information they represent may dry up if sources of intelligence have to be there comes a stage when judicial scrutiny can go no further. In this context, two passages in the security service evidence are of particular importance. The first is when its witness, whose credentials are impressive, speaks of the care the service takes in determining whether it is safe to rely on intelligence information. The second is when he says that it is for practical reasons impossible to prosecute some of those the service believes to be foreign terrorists because to attempt to do so would itself imperil national security. On this appeal, we are concerned not only with matters of personal liberty, but with matters of life and death for possibly thousands of people. In these circumstances, it appears to me that the arrangements that have been made for judicial supervision of the decision of Parliament, imperfect as they are the best that can be devised for a situation like this. Although the point did not really arise for decision on the appeal since SIAC was able to reach their conclusion on the open material, it appears to me to be desirable that they should also have access to the closed material, and that the special advocate procedure is a better way of dealing with this than any procedure devised in this country in the past. Contrast, for example, Section 4 of the Prevention of Terrorism Temporary Provisions Act 1974, whereby the Home Secretary received advice in private from an independent advisor in relation to challenges against an exclusion order, and was not obliged to disclose the content of the advice or to say whether he accepted it or not. Like the first judgment, I do not consider that SIAC misunderstood their function or misdirected themselves as to the nature of the job they were to do. I interpret the passage in paragraph 21 of their determination as applying, in their own words, the third principle suggested by Lord Hoffman. For these reasons, I am unable to hold that SIAC was wrong to refuse to controvert the Home Secretary's judgment on the question whether an emergency of the requisite seriousness existed. I would therefore dismiss the claimant's appeal on the first main issue. I turn to consider whether SIAC was wrong on the second main issue. Did Parliament go further than was strictly required by the exigencies of the situation when it enacted Part 4 of the 2000 Act? On this issue, SIAC made a finding of fact against which in itself there can be no appeal, and I agree with what my brother appeal judge has said in paragraphs 42 to 44 of his judgment about the question of law that relates to this issue. I wish, however, to add some comments of my own on some of the submissions we received. Mr. Emerson QC maintained that Part 4 of the 2001 Act was directed to a different and wider target than the national emergency from the risk of a terrorist attack against this country by members of the Al-Qaeda network, for which the purposes of this analysis must be assumed to exist. The government made no secret of the fact that one purpose of the measure was to reverse the effect of the decisions of the judge in the cited cases. In these circumstances, Mr. Emerson submitted that it was necessarily inconsistent with the requirement that a derogating measure must be carefully tailored to to meet the exigencies of the situation created by the emergency. He drew the concept of careful tailoring from the Supreme Court of Canada. That case was concerned with the question whether legislative control of tobacco advertising infringed the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And in paragraph 160 of her judgment, that judge said, as a second step in the proportionality analysis, the government must show that the measures at issue impair the right of free expression as little as reasonably possible in order to achieve the legislative objective. The impairment must be minimal. That is, the law must be carefully tailored so that rights are impaired no more than necessary. The tailoring process seldom admits of perfection, and the courts must accord some leeway to the legislator. If the law falls within a range of reasonable alternatives, the courts will not find it overbroad merely because they can conceive of an alternative which might better tailor objective to infringement. On the other hand, if the government fails to explain why a significantly less intrusive and equally effective measure was not chosen, the law may fail. And when I read the Act 2000, I think it was 2001, for some reason I missed the one off in my document. I must have deleted it for some reason. So I just had 200. Well, I know it's not 200. Okay.